Hello, I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant. You are listening to Autism One Radio and my show, Nourishing Hope for Autism. Today we have a wonderful guest on with me today. Her name is Sally Kirk, and she is the author and mother of, she's a mother and the author of a great new book called Hope for the Autism Spectrum, A Mother and Son Journey of Insight and Biomedical Intervention. And we are really excited to have Sally with us today to share her story and insights from the book. So thanks for being on today, Sally.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here and hope that I can help parents to understand biomedical intervention a little better and perhaps help them to see some opportunities for their child.
Great. And so tell people a little bit. You wrote this book, Hope for the Autism Spectrum, and it stems from your own experience with your son, correct?
Yes, yes. I have three boys, but my middle son, who was a perfectly healthy baby, started having trouble around 18 months, and he got a motor delay diagnosis by age two. By age five, it was an ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder diagnosis, and then in first grade, it was Asperger's syndrome. He just always got worse. It was new symptoms, and the old symptoms got more intense and worse, and it was despite a full arsenal of interventions that we started at age two, you know, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. We did everything they told us to do, early education, later special education, social skills training, and relaxation techniques, as well as drugs to suppress disturbing inattention problems that he had and runaway anxiety.
Mm.
So that was our story, and that was all the way up through the time he was 11 years old. And I stumbled across biomedical intervention. You can go to autism.com and learn about Defeat Autism Now, which, for those that don't know about it, it's a nationwide, actually worldwide organization of medical doctors and research scientists and parents who are helping heal autism by treating underlying physical problems that are common in our kids on the autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw a flyer for Defeat Autism Now conference, I was really amazed and intrigued by the whole idea because I had never heard anything to that effect from any of the medical providers or any sort of provider that we had ever had. And I had lived in three different parts of the country. You know, I lived in the Midwest and then in the South and in the East Coast and had a full set of providers at every place, and no one had ever mentioned that. So I was kind of leery of it. I was, you know, skeptical, but it sounded sensible and reasonable. So I went and looked into it. And my son has just done phenomenal, and I hope for those of you, you know, your listeners who have kids, especially, you know, it's very helpful to realize that a kid like mine who was 11 years old, you know, they talk about, oh, it's so much better if the kids are really young, but it just tells me that he had these problems and they persisted for years, and still the human body is so resilient that, you know, a kid at 11 could start some of the interventions, biomedical interventions, and just really respond beautifully. He's not what you would call recovered completely, but he is just 1,000 years better, you know, than he ever was before.
I'm so glad.
Do you want me to give some examples of how, or...
Yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit about it, and I'm so glad that you're, firstly, that he's doing so well, and the fact that he was a little older when you found biomedical, because so many people kind of get stuck in this, well, you know, there's a window, and if you're not three, then blah, blah, blah. And I've always felt that that did a disservice. So it's so exciting to hear your experience and your son's experience being 11 when you found this and seeing results. You know, he's a teenager now, so even seeing results today, it sounds like.
Right, right. We've been at this for about 4 years now, And he certainly is much better than he was. He's, you know, one of the best treasures of it is just he's a lot happier, and he's much more affectionate, whereas he'd been a pretty unhappy guy.
Mm.
He had a lot of anxiety trouble, meltdowns. Within 18 months of starting biomedical intervention, he was able to go off of his anxiety drugs, and his attention improved so much, his memory and his comprehension, his mental processing speed. You know, he used to take 3-5 seconds to respond to a question, and it disappeared. You know, he just has a normal response. He was able to go off his attention medication in about 3 years is how long that took. Before that, any time we ever tried to take him off, it was just really noticeable.
Mm.
You know, he'd talk a great deal and talk when other people were talking and run into doorways and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there came a time, you know, where he had enough healing that he actually, you could not tell that he didn't have his attention medication anymore. So that was very exciting. After 7 months, we put him back on a small dose for an edge in attention in class, but he's just so improved in that regard. And anytime, you know, your attention improves, you start gaining social skills.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the problems he had there started to kind of melt away. You know, eye contact came on, and his conversation skills came on, whereas before it was really just a question-answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really a conversation, but that's all we had. His ability to make friends and his range of interests, which had always been just a very few, very obsessive interests, just mushroomed into many interests in a wide variety of areas, can handle transitions, and his coordination and his physical endurance improved, and some of the sensory issues that went along. There's a lot of things, but those are the sorts of improvements that we've seen in him.
Wonderful. And were there any particular biomedical interventions that you felt like, you know, you did this intervention and you saw X improvement or improvement in this area, or anything in particular that stood out for you that was particularly helpful for him?
There are a lot of things that we have done, and often it's actually been hard to pinpoint what exactly was it. You know, was it the culmination of all these things or not? But the single most obvious wow that we ever got was, and it was a blessing, it was real early on, so I could get excited about biomedical intervention and not lose interest, was that took him off of dairy. And that's something, you know, you do for about 3 weeks to kind of see if it's going to help your child or not. And I didn't even have to go half that long. You know, and it's an easy thing to do in that there are some alias names that dairy goes by. You have to be sure that you're reading ingredient labels and know that your child really is, you know, on a valid trial of being dairy-free, casein-free. And I was skeptical when I went to do this because I grew up believing milk is the most wholesome food on earth. And, you know, you always got to drink your milk at dinner. But I tell you, that was the most obvious thing was the mental processing speed. Like I said, 3 to 5 seconds to ever respond to a question or a request, and he just went, it disappeared. And
wow.
I'm like, where can that go? You know, brain fog like that, you know, milk can't do that. It did. Somehow it did.
Mm-hmm.
And his range of interest, which had always been just an obsessive, you know, 2 or 3 things, just kind of mushroomed overnight. He went to like 5, and that was huge. That never happened. And so removing the dairy was the single biggest thing we ever did. And then the culmination of all the other things we've done, which have involved, you know, other dietary changes and supplementing vitamins and minerals and trying to improve his gut flora and his digestive tract and removing heavy metals and being more careful with our vaccines and antibiotics. All those things have just really culminated together to bring him to where he is today.
Great. And for people that are listening that might be new to diet, so dairy-free diet, as you said, is really a casein-free diet, because sometimes when you're seeing packages, there are people that want to avoid lactose, and so sometimes they will call dairy-free anything without lactose. So certainly you want to avoid everything with casein and caseinate, and so even the non-dairy cheeses often have caseinate. So you want to really do some diligence and looking to make sure that the diet is casein-free. But it's so great to hear that. And, you know, it's from my perspective as a nutrition consultant, not really, I was going to say not really surprising, or what I want to say more is that it's exciting to hear, because dairy can do exactly that. It can create opiates and things that make your brain foggy and inattentive. So I don't know if that's particularly what was up for him, but it is an interesting connection that, you know, you take that dairy out and you often see gains in attention and language and things because their brain is now not so bogged down by those morphine-like substances. You can imagine if you and I were on morphine all the time, we wouldn't be very, you know, sharp and able to make these connections and all of that very, very efficiently. So it's very interesting to find that he had such a dramatic improvement from taking that dairy out.
Yes, he did, and it really gave me incredible motivation to look into all the other biomedical interventions that are helping children, because I thought, you know, there really is something to this. Mm-hmm. And for a kid that just always got worse and had really become a difficult person to live with, it was just liberating.
Mm.
So exciting and so happy for him. You know, he got his life back.
Right.
And I got mine back, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it really alleviated a lot of issues for the whole family.
So talk a little bit about your book Hope for the Autism Spectrum, A Mother and Son Journey of Insight and Biomedical Intervention. And talk about, you have different parts in the book, and you go through different things about your journey in the first two parts. And then you really go into the biomedical piece. And I'd love for you to share a little bit of what you wrote about in that section and why you wrote about it, what you discovered through your journey about that biomedical piece.
Well, you know, it was such a life-altering event for me to, well, for me first to have a son that went autistic on me, basically. You know, I had envisioned that I would have this perfect baby and he would grow up and be perfect and everything would be great. Mm-hmm. And he would have all the same opportunities everyone else had. And it was just traumatic when it didn't unfold that way. And it was almost equally, maybe not traumatic, but exciting when I could do things that actually started to help him.
Mm.
And so I would never have had the motivation to sit down and write a book. It's a tremendous undertaking. I didn't realize how big it would be, but it was just so important to me to think, after how we had suffered, that people didn't have to suffer like that.
Mm.
And that I could write this book and people could read it and identify with it and think, you know, maybe if I did these things, I could improve my life and my child's life. And so that's what the first half of the book is about. It's our story, and it also includes a chapter that's the before and after difference of the first 18, 20 months of biomedical intervention, meaning, you know, like, what was he like before we started in terms of his memory or his processing speed or his sensory issues, like to loud noises, and then what was he like after that passage of time? And it's just night and day, and it gives people a real tangible comparison point that they can look at and give them some idea that this might be something that really got some hope.
Mm-hmm.
For my child, and I can try it. So that's the first half of the book. You know, people tell me they laugh and they cry, but the second half of the book is really my big motivator for writing it, and that is because when I started biomedical intervention, which was in mid-2004, it seemed to me that there was just, it was almost overwhelming. There was just so much information out there, and I read various books, and I went to conferences, and it was very time-consuming, and parents, so many parents just really do not have time. Or a medical background, which I don't have a medical background either, but the time to sit and sink into and actually pour over and study all this information and put it together and turn it into a powerful tool to help their child. So I thought, you know, what we really need is a book that can just go in and pull out what's in parents, important for parents to understand out of that sea of information and knowledge that the researchers and the medical doctors have. What is it just that parents need to know that they can use to help their child? And so that's what I set out to do, was to go and biomedical intervention primarily is we're talking about issues in the digestive tract and in the immune system and in body chemistry. And so in those three areas, I went through and siphoned out what parents need to know, and then perhaps once they understand what the underlying problems are in these areas and they know what the symptoms are to look for in their child, then come along with the interventions that are so effective to intervene and help those conditions. And the interventions make so much sense after you understand the underlying problems.
Right.
When you apply them then and the kids get better, it's just so exciting. So that's what this book's really about, is to be a fast track, how-to guide for biomedical intervention that's really easy to understand. It has a lot of practical information, so a parent can pick it up and actually start putting some of this into practice.
Great. So in that biomed piece, you mentioned you talk about the body chemistry, the gut and digestive component, and the immune system part. Let's start a little with the biochemistry. Just give us a little kind of idea of the what you found about the biochemistry and the body chemistry, and then, you know, what some of the common interventions, what are some of the approaches to that body chemistry are?
The body chemistry, which is very complicated, and if you've ever talked to a chemist, you know the body chemistry can get very involved. So often, though, parents really don't need to have that in-depth of an understanding. You know, the research scientists and the medical doctors that are trying to crack the codes in body chemistry and intervene and fix those problems, they need to understand body chemistry to an excruciating degree. But parents really only need a very high-level understanding of it, and really the gearing, you know, that's geared toward the impact. They need to understand the impact of problems in body chemistry. The body chemistry is just crucial in autism spectrum disorders, and it's unfortunate that unlike some of the other issues, like in the digestive tract or the immune system, they're easy to observe. You know, I can see diarrhea, I can see constipation or lots of frequent ear infections. I can see those things, but body chemistry is a very hard thing to observe. And so, like in the book, I have a chapter where I describe how the body chemistry is supposed to work on a very high level that anyone without a chemistry background or medical background can understand, and then what goes wrong in that chemistry and the primary impacts that result is, one is it impairs the body's ability to rid itself of toxins and heavy metals, and then those can accumulate in their bodies and wreak havoc. And then the other is, too, that we're always so interested in brain function in autism, it leads to out-of-sync brain cell communication. And that's the meaning of life to a brain cell, is to be able to communicate, to pull all the pieces of perception together and get an idea. It's got to be so coordinated, just like a song, you know, with all the different parts singing in unison. And when it gets out of sync, because the body's not able to support the brain, you know, the brain uses like 9 times more energy than any other organ. So it's so important the body is really supporting it well. Mm-hmm. And when it's not, you know, we don't get good brain cell communication and things degrade, and that's what we see. But there was probably a long answer to your question. But
that's
interventions
great.
There is, once you kind of understand what the underlying problems are, how the chemistry is supposed to work, and then you see where the problems are, the interventions make a great deal of sense, because we're providing the body with, in most cases, some sort of vitamin or supplement that is lacking in the chemistry and helps to get that chemistry working and flowing better,
sure.
Like methyl B12, for instance, or some other supplements like TMG or folic acid, those sorts of things.
Sure. And, just even describing the impact of biochemistry is a long explanation, and it's so complex. I thought you did a great job going into that. And then you talk about the gut, and, of course, with diet, I am always stressing the importance of the gut, because the food is coming in contact with the gut, and the food is digesting. The gut is digesting that food every day, and so the gut has a lot of important pieces to it, all the good and bad bugs that can get in the gut that either can support it or wreak havoc on it. But what do you kind of what was your experience with gut for your son, and what do you talk about in the book in terms of the gut, and then I know you go into some food things as well, but let's just start with the kind of what some of the common problems that you saw with the gut in autism, and maybe even with your experience.
Right. Well, in the digestive tract, that's really an important place to start with biomedical intervention. As you mentioned, you know, removing foods from the diet that are antagonizing the body in some way, and that's not necessarily the same from one child to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Foods do not cause autism, but they can intensify it considerably. And a child that is, they say you are what you eat. Really, you are what you can digest and absorb.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're eating foods that are antagonizing that body in some way, you're just not going to be able to function as well. And I know that strikes fear in the heart of any parent, especially of a picky eater, because, you know, it's a very fearful to think of even taking away any food that a child will actually eat.
Right. Since they very limited food choices to start
right,
with.
Right, to start with. You know, my kid's going to starve.
Right.
But, you know, often it's important to know that often these kids, they do become better eaters once they get away from the foods that are causing them trouble.
I'm so happy to hear you say that as a mom, because I tell people this all the time, and it's always great to hear it from live experience, because I hear it from all my clients, but then, you know, it's great that that people can hear it directly from you. Say it again.
Okay, well, it is true. It is true. Kids may crave and obsess over certain foods, but once they get away from that, it's usually a sign that that particular food is a real problem
right.
for them. But once they can get away from it, and they'll start to eat more foods, and you can introduce more things that they get a better balance to it. And that's really just all points to the problem that you do have problems in the digestive tract. Picky eating is
mm-hmm.
a symptom of underlying digestive tract issues, as are food cravings
mm-hmm.
and other things like diarrhea and constipation. And you got to look at poop. I hate to be radio show, but, you know, there are rules for what poop should and should not look like.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know what those are. You know, it's the kind of thing I talk about in the book. And you can influence that and improve those conditions. You know, I don't have to know anything about how a car engine runs.
Mm-hmm.
If I see black smoke billowing out of a tailpipe, there's a problem in that engine.
Right, right, right.
But if you look in a diaper or the toilet, that's another place that you can look
mm-hmm.
to know that we've got some digestive tract issues. You know, you may see kids may have reflux
mm-hmm.
or thrush, which is the white spots in the mouth or a white coating on the tongue, diaper rash, fatigue. Those can all be related to digestive tract problems. There's things you can see like dark circles under the eyes, which, you know, only old people are supposed to, you know, little kids shouldn't have dark circles. Red ears, red
mm-hmm.
cheeks, those can be food sensitivity related, skin rashes, even behaviors, you know, like hyperactivity. That can be a response to food additives or certain components in certain foods, or drunken, giggling kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That can all be, symptoms that parents can see that often we may be aware of, but we don't realize that's actually something I can do something about.
Right.
And foods and what you eat are a big part of helping to heal that. Also, as you mentioned, your gut flora, you know, the world of bacteria and yeast that live in your digestive tract, you know, I never really had much of a sense when I started all this for what that was. I know some people eat yogurt, you know, it's supposed to be good for growing good bacteria in your gut, but I wasn't too sure what they were even talking about. But that is just really so important, and that's something for my son that's been a big issue, is trying to cope with getting a good balance to his digestive tract gut flora. A lot of times that's related to antibiotics, and a lot of our kids had a lot of antibiotics when they were small, as did my son, and
mm-hmm.
that contributes to imbalance there.
Right.
So those are many of the interventions that I discuss, problems and interventions that I discuss in the book relate to improving the condition of gut flora, as well as the various diets that help different kids, and helping give parents some guidance to figure out, because our kids often are kind of like snowflakes, and you got to figure out, well, which diet or which foods, and How do I solve this mystery of my child to give him what he really needs and support him and mm-hmm. help reduce his autistic behaviors? And that is, you know, the kind of thing that I try to explain in the book and give people some guidance with.
Sure. And so was your experience with your son that as you took out the problematic foods, the dairy and things like that, he started to expand and eat more? Did he start eating more vegetables, or what was his experience there?
In my particular son, he was a fairly good eater to start with, and what I actually saw is as I changed things in his diet, I saw, you know, the really dramatic things like his mental processing speed improved and his range of interest improved. So sometimes it was behaviors. Other times it was, you know, from, like I said, watching the toilet and seeing, you know, this stuff isn't getting digested. This engine doesn't work with these certain kinds of foods. I need to get that out. And he would do a lot better,
mm-hmm.
you know, as I did those sorts of things. I've used many of the different diets just to kind of explore and try to, you know, that's how you answer questions. We do that ourselves, you know. Anytime you try to take, influence something with diet, like, you know, just about everybody's probably at one time in their life decided to go on a diet because they wanted to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, weight is a physical symptom, and they're trying to influence with what they eat. And so you just do a trial, and that's what any of the diets really are about, is you do a trial for a reasonable amount of time, which is different lengths for different diets, because of the way the body works with those foods, but you try different ones and see how they do for you, and that's what I've done with my son, is several different ones, and when I find things that work, I stick with that, and then when I read about something else, maybe I try something else. Even if you've ever had, like, trouble sleeping at night, and maybe you think, well, that might be related to, you know, if you're a coffee drinker, caffeine. You cut that out. You change your diet to see if you can affect a physical symptom, and if it works, then you go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if caffeine seems to upset your stomach, you quit drinking soft drinks and see if that helps. You know, so we've all done the various trials of food in various ways, and this is just a little more sophisticated, more intentional kind of a style that we do with our kids on the spectrum.
Sure.
But the goals are the same, and it's really very familiar. This isn't, you know, sometimes people think biomedical intervention is so, you know, mysterious, and they're not familiar with it. And it's like, really, they're all things we've done before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we change our diet to influence our weight, you know, or if we get sick, maybe we take vitamin C, mm-hmm. or we drink extra orange juice to get vitamin C. We're trying to do things to influence a symptom,
right.
And that's what biomedical intervention is.
Great. Well, what else in our last just couple minutes, anything you want in closing to share with parents that might be out there?
Maybe just to say that biomedical intervention has got a tremendous amount of potential and opportunity, and that it's really worth it to learn a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
And as you do that, you may be very surprised to see how little light bulbs go off in your head about, oh, you know, my son does this or my daughter does that, and I wonder if that could be related, and I know his history, and you start putting all these puzzle pieces together, and it starts to make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you treat along that line, you're just doing something very sensible and rational and reasonable that has actually helped a lot of kids to improve in their autistic condition, and it's really worth looking into.
Great. It's so great to get your experience. We've been speaking with Sally Kirk. She is the author of Hope for the Autism Spectrum, a mother and son journey of insight and biomedical intervention. Sally, I wanted to thank you again so much for being on today.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And people can find your book at Amazon and pretty much anywhere. Is that correct?
Certainly, Amazon.com, the bookstores. The nice thing about Amazon.com is you can actually look at the table of contents mm-hmm. and the first few pages of the book right there online. You know, click and look inside.
Great, yes. And it's a wealth of information and lots of great topics covered. And so, thank you so much for everything you are doing and contributing to others as you're helping your own family. And it's so needed. And thanks for being on today.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Autism One Radio. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant here on Autism One Radio and my show, Nourishing Hope for Autism. Stay tuned every third Monday for our show. Take care.